so blessed and honored to have in the studio with us tonight, legendary They Smell organist. Are you in the Hall of Fame? You should be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, my photo is there, actually. There's an exhibit called Women in Baseball. And there aren't too many women, so I made it.
There's a woman who needs no introduction, Nancy Faust. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Well, it's fun to be here. Thank you, Dave.
I've written a lot about you. You're in our book about disco demolition. I asked you to come in. Thanks for coming down.
You were so kind. How could I deny you? Thank you.
It's because I guess the anniversary is the 12th. It was 1979, the 38th anniversary of disco demolition. But before we get into that, and I should say, Dan, I think we'll take, once we set all this up, maybe we'll take some calls. We usually don't take a lot of calls on the show, but I know you have a lot of fans out there. So if you want to talk to Nancy, you would call 312-981-7200 and share your memories with her. But Nancy, from the beginning, how'd you hook up with the White Sox? How did that all start?
Well, I started playing when I was very young, and it came easy to me because I played by ear, could play anything. And when my friends in college, who happened to be sports fans, realized the one talent that I had, which was playing without music, and then they said, you belong at a ball game because you'd fit right in. And I said, well, I'm not a sports fan, never attended a ball game or a basketball game or anything like that. So my friends proceeded to write letters to all the teams and sign my name.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so then the White Sox evidently saved it because I played for a function that the White Sox attended with Stu Holcomb, the general manager of the White Sox, way back in probably 69.
69, right.
Yeah, and he heard me play, and he remembered that I had written a letter. So he just followed up and said, hey, you know, we'd love to have you come work for us. And the rest was history.
So you started in 1970, what we've talked about before. That was one of the worst teams in White Sox history. I have here 59 and 103.
Okay, great. Well, that was a great time for me to break in because, like I said, I knew nothing about baseball. And to have a woman behind the keyboard, too, was kind of an unusual thing.
It had never been. Had it ever been done?
No. In fact, I was told that a petition had circulated my first year, saying that this no place for a woman. You know, I don't know. Maybe I belong in a kitchen.
Really?
Which is a joke.
Really? I didn't. Okay. So you played, and it was a bad team.
It was a bad team, but great year to get to break in because there were very few people there. The organ was located at that time in center field bleachers. I was kind of lonely out there. The organ was placed in center field bleachers in 1960 when the first organist was hired, and that was kind of an unusual thing to place the organ out with the fans. That was one of Bill Veeck's moves when he owned the team the first time. He hired the first organist, who was Shea Torrent.
Right.
Shea later went out to California, played for the Angels for many years.
Well, I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that. So when did you develop what was your routine like when you go to the ballpark? What would you play? I mean, you're known for playing songs for certain players. How did all that develop?
Well, I just knew I was to play the national anthem.
Uh-huh.
And when I was hired, Stu wrote a little note saying, do you suppose you could play a little something as each batter approaches the plate? Like, play their state song, he suggested.
So they were from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I just remember there was a Bart Johnson. I believe he was from California. That was the one thing that I can still remember. And I was pretty good at that because I can play by ear. And I knew all the state songs because my mother was a musician, and she had taught me everything she knew. And she had to play a lot of state songs because she played for many conventions over the years. And so this was very easy for me to do. So that's how I started, just playing state songs and playing the national anthem, playing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And then it kind of grew from there because state songs was no fun anymore, and I realized there's things that could be done that would make it more interesting.
Now, two things happened to you. When did you move out of the center field bleachers to where you really had a great relationship with them? I mean, maybe a better relationship with the fans. When did that move take place?
Well, Stu Holcomb moved me from the center field bleachers to a spot directly behind home plate in 1972. And at that time, then I was surrounded by fans, and I had a pretty good handle on what I was doing. And I really felt as though I was on top of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew I had the greatest job in the world, and I had command of the music. It was just the PA fella and me, and it was, you know, it was just the perfect thing for me to be doing.
Did fans give you ideas?
Oh,
was the relationship like with the fans? Like with the
very
rapport?
Very open. I mean, they passed me. I was out in the open. They were very knowledgeable, of course, and so I got great ideas for songs, for situations, and for players. And all I needed was the idea, and then I could execute.
Okay.
And so we were a team.
Okay, Dan, you want to do this a little bit? We're going to set it up and then maybe go into a couple other players. I get a kick out of this. So Albert Bell would come up to the plate and you'd play. Okay. And then Robert, one more. We'll do one more maybe. Robin Ventura would come up to the plate and you'd play.
Well, first of all, Albert Bell, I probably would only play I'm So Sorry, Uncle Albert, when he struck out.
Oh, okay.
But Call Me Al, perhaps when he walked up the plate, or if he struck out, I'd play One Less Bell to Answer. Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, Fly, Robin, Fly.
Yeah.
That was great. Robin Ventura Highway for Robin Ventura.
Yeah.
Right?
You had a lot for
Oh, all the bird songs.
Yeah, yeah a lot
yeah,
for
yeah. Of course, he wasn't around for Angry Birds when he struck out. No.
So now how... Did those come right to your head, or did people, you know, how did you come up with that?
I'd hear a name, and then I'd think of a song that had that particular word in the song.
Yeah.
And play that portion of the song that incorporated the name.
And did players ever get any feedback from the players? Did they have ideas? Did they say they didn't like this, they liked that?
No, tell you the truth, I felt I was there for the entertainment of the fans. Not so much the players, and I, as far as I knew, my music just was white noise for them, and they were concentrating on their doing their thing, not the music.
Yeah.
It's changed now.
Yeah. Well,
but at the time, it was just the amusement of the fans, and I thought it was another aspect or another dimension of entertainment.
Yeah, you said you went to opening day. I think it was rained out. But
that's this
I mean,
year.
You know, what I don't like is like just the walk up music now. I mean, like you know, tracks.
Well,
I miss you know. Miss the
that's what they've coined it now. They use the term walk-up music,
yeah.
And I guess that's what I did too. But it was just based on my own preference, not theirs.
Well, there's just something so beautiful about the sound of an organ in a baseball stadium. You know,
it is traditional.
It is really nice.
Even know? Those parks that do not use live music, you'll hear sound bites of organs just because it kind of goes with it.
So then, the other thing that happened to you, talk about Harry Carey.
Okay.
We were talking a little about that before. What was his influence on your career?
Well, Harry joined the team. Harry was hired by Stu as well my second year, I think in 1971, and I was still out in the center field bleachers. And to get a better grasp on the game, I would have a little radio out there, and I'd listen as I was playing. I would listen for terms, baseball terms that I could play off of, you know, going to the showers or walk. I mean, just terms that I wasn't familiar with, but I could play a song that reflected the term. So I would listen to Harry, and once a very slow game, Harry was very outspoken, and he said something like, oh, this game is dragging on, and they're going to have to carry me out of this park. And so that, of course, inspired me when I heard the word carry, so I played Carry Me Back to Old Virginia. I just did it because it was at dead time. And with that, I heard him say on the radio, oh, listen to that organist. Who is that organist? Jeez, that person's playing Carry Me Back to Old Virginia. And then after that, I think I followed with I'm Just Wild About Harry.
You did.
Because he encouraged me. And so he became aware of who I was, and he threw that name out a lot, too. He was one of these guys that threw out every aspect of the game, you know, that he felt was were positive.
And it really was a natural fit. There was a lot of chemistry with you guys.
Yeah, well, then once the organ was moved behind home plate, I could see him then. And so then we could play off of each other. I could see when he was standing and ready to dance to Jailhouse Rock or, you know. Yeah, so there was more back and forth like
yeah.
that.
What about Jimmy Pearsall? What was your relationship with him?
Well, Jimmy Pearsall was my friend. In fact, I played for his wedding when he married Jan, and his wedding rehearsal dinner was at our house because he came over and we had chicken dinner, and he brought his friend who was going to sing at the wedding. So I knew him that well, and Jan was a wonderful wife, and she had a really good understanding of him and was able to tolerate his ups and downs. And I remember one time when I was playing pregame songs, and Jimmy was doing a commercial up in the booth, and I was bothering him, and so he yelled down, cut the music, and I did, and then Vec called and said, hey, you know, you got to keep playing, and we don't have dead music for the fan. So I kept playing, and then Jimmy again yelled down at me, and so I stopped again, and then Vec called, said, young lady, who's paying your, you know, who's putting the food on your plate? So I kept playing, and I, much to the probably wrath of Jimmy, I understand that it's not easy to concentrate sometime when you got music blaring in your ears. And so it was clear that it was distressed for an evening.
In a little bit, we will talk about Disco Demolition, but he wasn't a fan of Disco Demolition.
I'm sure, yeah. I don't think he liked loud noises, you know, and thumping and drums and... I don't think so.
More than 3,000 games in 41 seasons. No one's done 41 seasons. In my record-keeping stories, they've done. Ernie Hayes at St. Louis retired after 40 years, so you did 41.
Oh, that's
plus
great.
Another four at Kane County, right?
That's great. After I retired, I went to Kane County just for a promotion, a Bill Veeck promotion.
Yeah, I remember those.
And
yeah.
It went over so well that they said, come on back. So we figured maybe just Sunday afternoons, which was lovely.
You only missed, my number was 7 games, is that right?
But no, actually 5.
5, okay. For funerals and giving birth to your son, Eric.
That's correct.
Who now has, I just learned this, Eric has his own band.
Well, Eric plays in a band, and they're really good, but he's a web developer, but he on the side, he plays percussion in an orchestra and in a band called Sugar Mama and the Gold Diggers.
Sugar Mama and the Gold Diggers. Uh-huh. And they play around. They come into the city now and then, you said?
Occasionally,
So, I mean, you're like the number one baseball organ player of all time, right?
Well, Thank you.
Did you talk when you were coming up? I mean, did you talk to other organ players? Did you talk to Ernie Hayes? I mean, was there any a path for you, or did you create your own path?
I think I created my own path. I've always kind of been in my own world. After the Na-Na thing took off, and other parks became aware that maybe some extra excitement could be added, there were other teams that sent their organists to sit near me and just take notes. But it's just sometimes you need the chemistry of the whole park. It's not just the organist. It's just the way the fans are and their response.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to take a break for some commercials, and we'll be back. We'll talk a little about Disco Demolition after this on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. So, Nancy Faust, why would you play that?
I don't want. Well, that was in Agata DeVita, and it sounded so much like the word, like the name Incaviglia. So, I mean, it was a natural. Wouldn't you do the same?
That's great. I mean, so did you have a big record collection? I mean, did you listen to the radio a lot?
I did.
You were aware of what was going on.
Yes, I listened to the radio a lot, and those were the days of cassettes. Yeah. And so I'd record things on my cassette, and then I'd play about 4 or 8 bars at a time and get it in my head. And for certain things, I only had to do 4 or 8 measures like that.
Yeah, right.
So that's how I learned my songs, just listening over and over. And I was always working on something that was current. Yeah. And I think that's how I was able to maintain my position, was just updating my music and my style.
That's true, yeah.
And after having been there maybe 10 or 15 years or so, I added a sequencer and a synthesizer so I could better duplicate the original sound.
Yeah.
And then they found that a DJ could do the same thing. That was my downfall.
So you were so great to participate in the... I was going to say best-selling, but the selling copies. Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died, that I wrote with Steve Dahl and Paul Neck and Photos. So we have a chapter on you in there.
Oh, what a great exhibit over in Elmhurst.
In Elmhurst, that's it. We saw you like last weekend.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Thank you for coming out to that.
Mission Peterick.
Peterick was there, yeah. Uh-huh. So what do you remember about that night? So the 12th, that's what, that's coming Wednesday? It'll be the 39th anniversary, 38th anniversary.
Well, I probably remember it because I've talked about it so much since then. But I know that starting out, it was just another promotion with my music going da-da-da-da-da and having people chant along like disco sucks. I mean, that was the chant of the evening.
Yeah.
But it just – and I was doing it a lot until I realized it was out of control. And I was given the sign to stop. And Harry got on the microphone and pleaded with people. And Veeck got on the mic and pleaded with people to take their seats. And it just turned into a real brawl.
Wasn't there one point where they I know they cut this even before the game started. Weren't you supposed to play Do You Think I'm Sexy or something on the Orioles?
That was on the script.
It was on the script.
I was going to play Do You Think I'm Sexy, and Steve Dahl was going to sing along with
his
the words
song.
Do You Think I'm Disco.
Yeah, right. But that never even got that
no,
far.
No, never got that far.
You told me this is a great story. Tell me about the nuns that were sitting when you said at first I saw little fires breaking out in the outfield.
Well,
the
that's true. I saw fires on this was getting scary. But other than that, the nuns that were sitting near me were turned to people that I know and say, "What is everybody yelling?" You know what? And they didn't want to say at that time that they didn't want to tell the nuns that everybody was yelling disco socks. So they said, "Oh, well, we're all just yelling let's go socks." And so they just engaged in cheering, and it was just a funny sight to see the nuns, you know, clapping along to let's go socks. But it wasn't really.
So from your memory, tell us what your path was. Like, what did you do once everything broke loose and stuff?
I think I did very little then.
Yeah.
I think we played Take Me Out to the Ball Game, trying to get everybody get back into the baseball spirit. That didn't work. So actually my role was just to sit there and observe and just be amazed until we were sent home. Because
how'd you get out? Were you worried about yourself?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But there was quite a scene, quite a masses.
Now the Vex have been. We've had Mike on the show a few times. Mike Vec. They were masters of promotion. Was there anything else? Of course, there was nothing of this grandeur. But what about some of the other promotions they did? Like, they did ethnic nights. Didn't you have to learn different ethnic songs?
Absolutely, I had to learn, and that was really hard for me because I don't read music well. But I knew well enough in advance so that I could struggle through the anthem from the various countries. We had a German night, Polish night, Greek night, you name it. You know, so there were quite a few of
and
those.
You would have to learn all those songs.
Yeah, and then I'd play all the German songs that I knew and all the polkas that I knew, and there'd be country night, played all the country music. So it was a challenge, but it kept the variety going with the music.
And what'd you think about disco music? You yourself?
Oh, I love disco music.
You did like
disco. Yeah, I know you're not exactly a fan.
No.
But I just thought it lent itself to, and I love the beat, you know, you had to bob your head, and I really liked it. Yeah.
It says here, I know you married Joe, who's in the studio in 1980, but
I think we were dancing a couple of disco songs, Joe.
But before you met Joe, you told me that you would go to the Rookery a little bit.
Yes, that was before I met him. That's correct. Uh-huh.
Rookery on Division Street.
Yeah.
Harry give you any tips on places to go?
No, I think Harry would go to Faces, was it? He went to another place where there was a piano player. I don't know if they...
But he didn't go to the Rookery or anything.
No, but he did. They coined his position as mayor of Rush Street.
Right.
So he did get down there a lot, but not to the Rookery.
So you would play, you told me the first disco song you played was Van McCoy's. This is great. The Hustle.
Oh, yeah.
Because people were hustling.
Yeah, not only was it a cool song, but I could even apply it to a hustle, you know, running to first, second base, something like that. So, that lent itself. But so many disco songs had titles that could just lend themselves to
situations.
Can you
think of any others off the top of your head?
Give me a disco song, Joe. Staying Alive. Any of them. Fly, Robin, Fly.
Oh, well, here you told me More for Junior. Well, this is longtime Sox fans will remember Junior Moore. Ring My Bell for Kevin Bell.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
What's the one about Disco Inferno? They were all so. A lot of Michael Jackson songs, they were all good. I don't know if those were disco, but. There was always songs that were popular that lent themselves to situations. And I'm still hearing things like that now, and I think, if I were playing, I'd do this or that. But
so you were around at a really interesting time of popular culture. You even anticipated that we were talking before the show, the streaker thing?
Right, because I think it was about the year 77 when the streaking thing took off, and it was off-season. But I just had a feeling that opening day, somebody somehow or somewhere would show up on the field. And sure enough, so I was prepared knowing I'd play one of two songs, and I did. And the song that I chose was Is That All There Is? It was a fella. And then it showed up in Reader's Digest. Somebody heard me play that. The song that I would have played otherwise was I've Got Plenty of Nothing. Now, remember those days?
Yeah. So the Streakers, the disco, you're from Chicago, right? Where were you born?
I was born in Chicago, and I went to Roosevelt High School. On the Northwest Side. Yeah.
Last question before we break for the news. Do you think this would happen as well if it had been at Wrigley? Or do you have a great audience for stuff like this at Comiskey?
It just seemed like there was a good marriage.
Yeah, right.
At the time, I don't know. It probably could have. I don't know. It was just more of a rowdy. I don't know if it was rowdier, but more vocal and
yeah,
not quite
right.
as polite of a crowd, perhaps. But yeah,
I think you're exactly
more
right.
fun loving.
Yeah. We're going to talk. Take a break, and we're going to talk about Na Na Hey Hey after David Jennings and the news on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. You're here with the great Nancy Faust, White Sox, all-time baseball, the hit king, the Pete Rose of Oregon players. So there's your defining moment. I don't want to walk all over it. How did all that happen? How did you get known for that?
Okay, well, it was something that I had played on and off, I suppose, once. But in 1977 was a year that we were vying for first place in the middle of summer.
It was the Hitmen, right?
Well, yeah, they were called the Hitmen eventually that year. And we were vying for first place, playing Kansas City, a big crowd out there. And the fans were just vocal, you know. Usually most of the response was in terms of clapping, you know, or charge. But for some reason, I played it when they took the pitcher out of the game, and just everybody sang, and that was just such an unusual response. It was the first time that I know of that fans actually sang at a ballpark other than "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" or the national anthem. So that created such an impact, and the writers were all saying, "What was that song? What, you know?" And the ingredients were all there, and then we had these curtain calls where the players were tipping their hats, and Kansas City was angry, and we went back there. So then they played the song when we'd go there, and they'd play the song at the parks wherever the Sox went, just to taunt us back. And then Mercury re-released the record because it became popular
by Steam.
Again. That was a record by Steam, and it was recorded actually in 1969, but it was resurrected then, and Mercury actually presented me with a gold record in a pregame ceremony then in the late 1977.
Yeah, you brought that song back. Now, we should mention Gary DiCarlo, who sang on that. He just passed away.
Yeah, it was really sad to hear that, and I didn't realize that he had led kind of a sad had a sad story to tell about that song.
Well, they said for a while he didn't want to sing it.
Right, so that when it was performed, it was lip-synced, and he wasn't even seen, although toward the end, I think.
I think there was one promotion Mike Veck was telling me about where he wanted to hire Steam for something. Oh. I don't know, and they said, well, there is no Steam.
Right,
Steam is really Gary DiCarlo. It was like
was a studio musician, and they didn't want to pay for somebody well-known, so... And it was to be the B-side record, and it just took off.
Covered by Bananarama and the Supremes.
And
Gary passed away on July 2nd of this year at age 75. You know, I've run into you a million times. In the time we have left, I bet the one thing that a lot of listeners don't know is tell us about your mom and your mom's background in music and her history with the barn dance.
Oh, my goodness.
I think that is so great.
Oh, well, thanks. I know you're quite a music buff. I don't know if a lot of people still remember the WLS barn dance, which was live radio and appealed all over. It was played all over the Midwest, I believe. And my mother was part of that show for a couple years. It was a daily...
In the 1940s?
In the 1940s, yeah, during the war, I think. And she talked about it, but I think it happened before I was born, and it kind of went in one ear and out the other. But lately, I've read and heard more about the WLS barn dance. And my mother was part of a trio called Jenny, Joy, and Jean. Even though my mother's name was Jackie Faust, in fact, when I started playing, I used her maiden name Faust. But anyhow, so she was part of a musical trio, Jenny, Joy, and Jean. And because her real name was Jackie, they didn't want her to be Jackie on the radio because people might think it was a man. So they gave her the name Jean, which I think could have been a man as well.
Sure.
But so the trio played regularly and entertained every Saturday night at the 8th Street Theater in Chicago, where people would come from miles to see live entertainment. And she just she was a wonderful musician. She attended the Chicago Musical College and played classical, popular, had a wonderful, perfect pitch ear and could read manuscript. And so she spent a lifetime just playing music. And when she stopped playing for the WLS Barn Dance, in fact, a lot of those people went on to fame at the Grand Ole Opry. Sure. But she stayed in Chicago. She got married, had a family, but played for many functions that required live music. She was a great accompanist. So a lot of functions featured vaudeville-type entertainment. And she would provide their music, you know, even...
She played accordion?
She could play accordion, but piano was her main instrument. And she then reached out, branched out. She played violin on WLS Barn Dance. But they bought an organ when I was 4, and that's when it captured my fancy. And so she played organ as well. And
you brought in something. This is what, 1942?
Yes.
The Tribune. It's a full page of just different radio shows that you could hear all day on Chicago radio, but there's a picture of them. Jenny, Joy, and Jean are featured on WLS Smile a While Club at 5 a.m. daily.
What a grind.
Except Thursday, and they have programs of their own at 8:30 a.m. I mean, some of these other shows that we were talking about, I mean, there's WGES, 8:30 in the morning, Lithuanian Housewives. I mean, radio was just crazy. Leo DeRocher is a guest here.
We pointed that out. Must have been a player.
Bill Stern Sports guest Leo DeRocher. That was on WMAQ. But radio was just such a wide open landscape.
Look at this.
The Tuberculosis Institute on WGES. Wild stuff. So your mom was part of that whole Chicago fabric.
Yes, uh-huh. And she actually filled in for me once at the ballpark when I had to leave early. But her music was a little different than mine in that I kept changing my style. And she was more steeped in a traditional style, but just a great, great grand musician.
There's so many interesting angles to your life. I mean, there really is. Now, so your mom, this is one time I came up to visit you guys, where you live, way up north. And so you told me when your mom played country and county fairs and stuff, you would go to the animal barns.
That's correct. Hey, Joe, one of the pictures that I brought to show Dave was at a county fair. Well, another thing my mother did was accompany, she did like a whole circuit of Midwest county fairs in the Midwest. And on the Midway, they'd feature like vaudeville type acts for entertainment. Now, people would come and sit in the grandstands, and she would be the accompanist for all kinds of circus acts, singers, tumblers. But when I'd go along, it was a family thing. We'd all go to the fair because she'd be playing, but I would head for the animal barns because that was the highlight of my time.
And you love animals.
I loved animals. And I guess music was an avenue so that I could someday have a horse and...
True.
Yeah.
Really?
I think when I was a child, I thought, if I could be a veterinarian, great, but I don't think I could have cut the chemistry. So
now when I saw you last with your animals, that was probably when you left the White Sox. So how many animals? Did you still have the trick donkeys and stuff? Remember you showed me the donkeys that you taught tricks and stuff?
I do. I have two donkeys. But
what are their names?
Well, Mandy is the big one.
I met Mandy, didn't I?
Yeah, sure, yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm sure she remembers you. Oh, no, she's not an elephant. She's a donkey.
Yeah.
But my first donkey, I have to tell you, was a product of Bill Veck's promotion. Because that was one of the door prizes that a person did not claim. And so the donkey stayed eating cotton candy and popcorn there and under the stands. And I asked him if I could take it home, and he gave it to me.
So, yeah, let's back up. This was, first of all, I read a little bit about this before we hit. It was called Ragtime Night.
That's
so I'm
right.
Guessing it was just like a lot of weird giveaways and stuff.
Yes,
right?
Anything associated with the ragtime. And I don't know what that is exactly.
Yeah, neither do I.
Probably an old car.
Yeah, right.
Maybe an old piano. And a swayback donkey that was donated from Adventureland.
That was Rosita.
Right. Well, actually, her name was Rosie. And when my neighbor heard Rosie, he said, "Oh, Rosita." So we changed the name to Rosita.
So the donkey's at Comiskey.
Yes.
And then you end up with the donkey.
That's right. And it was a wonderful pet. I mean, you could teach her things, and she was sociable. And
so how'd you get her home and stuff?
I had a neighbor with a horse trailer that had a horse trailer and brought her home for me.
And what year was this?
Well, it was in the 70s, perhaps 75.
So, Joe, you weren't around yet, were you?
No, Joe wasn't in the picture.
So you've had the animals, you've had the love of animals since then?
Chickens and donkeys and horses and things like that.
So what all do you have now?
Well, we finally acquired a second donkey to keep our primary donkey company after having had her her for 15 years. We got her a companion. I think she's a little indifferent about it, but now we have a miniature donkey. Her name is Gigi, and she's a sweetheart. And then we have a dog that we acquired when there was a death in the family. So we have two donkeys, a dog.
And what's the dog's name in case the dog's listening?
The dog is Jack. Hello, Jack. No, Jack's 15 and he's going deaf.
Oh,
so
is he? Is
he's
he?
Not
just
listening,
like,
Dave.
Just like me. So what else, before we wrap it up, what are you doing? Are you enjoying retirement? I mean, and you did like the King County thing.
That was great.
Yeah, you were there on Sunday afternoons.
And I was there every Sunday afternoon that they played at home.
At home, right.
And I had a lot of social obligations, it seems. And once in a while, I'll get a call to play for something that I feel that my music is great. It fits, and so I accept. One thing I do is a trivia a big trivia event every February in Oak Park, where like 1,000 guys, and they present trivia, sports trivia
sports
questions.
Sports trivia.
And the tables compete against each other. And there's all the scads of men. And so when the questions are asked, I play music that's appropriate for the question. And it's just great. It's the perfect venue for me. And I'll do some sports-oriented parties and playing for, in a couple weeks, I'll be doing the 25th anniversary of Royal Melbourne Country Club.
Oh, really? Okay. So now, last thing, when I saw you at Elmhurst, Joe, and I've seen you a few times now, Joe helps transport the organ.
Yes.
So tell the listeners how that works. And did I hear when I was at Elmhurst, 400-pound organ?
Or probably. It's very much like the organ that I played at the Comiskey and then with the supplemental instruments, too.
Yeah.
But Joe's business, our sideline business, was we rented organs for rock groups, jazz fests, and gospel fests. And so we have the ability and the van, and these organs are on permanent dollies. So we provide them. We did that more in the past, and now we're kind of getting out of the business because it's not there as much as it once was.
Why is that?
I think the big organs have been substituted by keyboards.
Keyboards, right.
And they sound pretty good.
What were all the things you got out of your organ at Comiskey? I mean, one time you a sequencer, did you have drums? What were all the different sounds you were able to get?
I had
out
a
of
sequencer, and so with that, I bet the hardest part of my job was selecting a song and then entering each instrument into my sequencer. I mean, I would isolate it when I listen. I'd put the voice in, and then I'd do another line of strings and trumpets until you have a whole band, and you're just playing along with what I created on my sequencer. That was fantastic.
Wow.
And then I had an automatic drum, and I'd make a drum beat, and I'd MIDI it to the sequencer. So it's just like I just played along with the background music that I made. And that's just something that evolved over the years. When I first started playing there, I'd just show up with a sheet like this, different songs that I could play for situations, and just my purse. I just showed up, you know, and the organ, the B3 was out there, but it got more complicated as time went along.
Did you ever guesstimate about how many songs you would play a night?
No, I didn't. But
30, 40?
Oh, I mean,
more?
100.
100 a night. 100 a night.
At least.
Wow.
Just anything that would come into my head. You know,
wow.
You'd get this theme song from Dave, would get a theme from David Letterman's show, or David Crockett, Dave Clark 5.
Yeah, right.
You know, things like that. You're Scandinavian, I might do something. Swedish Rhapsody, I don't know.
Yeah. So as you look back on your career in baseball, I mean, and all those nights at Comiskey, and just what sticks out in your mind? Are there a couple moments?
A lot of commuting. Never had an accident.
Yeah,
that's
really
pretty good. Playing for the World Series, of course, was.
You're wearing your ring, aren't you?
I even got a ring. I have a ring here, so you know, I'm worth a lot of pride, and maybe I was very fortunate to have been there during the Sox, one of the great years. Playing for a couple All-Star games was fantastic.
Sure.
And just having been there to see certain players that I'll never forget, like Richie Allen and Carlton Fisk and Zisk and there's just so many.
Yeah.
And having met all these made lasting friendships.
That's what's great. And we're going to wrap it up. But that's what's great is it's I don't know if it even exists as much today. The connection you have with the fans is just special.
I have to thank Bill Veeck for having placed me out with the fans, because it was a thing that I could talk to them and I could do my job well at the same time, and it was just wonderful. It was a wonderful career, a wonderful life.
Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Great to see you again.
Recollecting. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy Faust. Thanks, Joe.